73 degrees now for Racine. It is 73 as well in Kenosha. Humidity 96%. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan from the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. And we welcome you to the morning show on WGTD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and it's a great pleasure to be sitting opposite President Brian Albrecht, president of Gateway Technical College, paying his monthly visit to the program. We welcome you back.
Thank you, Greg. I can't believe how fast these months fly by. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, these summer months go like the wind, don't they? And especially when exciting things are happening. And wow, there have been a lot of exciting things on your calendar. And top of the list has to be a recent visit by Governor Tony Evers.
Well, you know, anytime we can have a governor visit or a dignitary elected official, we're always very proud to showcase what we do here at Gateway. And the governor had a chance to visit in two occasions, actually. One, the Racine campus, as we'd put together a workforce development discussion group for him, was our industry leaders that shared their perspective on the worker shortage and what the needs were and how the state might continue to make investments in those areas. You know, we've been very fortunate at Gateway to have a strong legacy of our workforce partners, and state funding through the Fast Forward Initiative and through Department of Workforce Development have helped support a lot of that. So it was great that we could gather so many people together, and the governor took the time to come down and listen. And he was quite pleased and impressed, I think, with what our employers are doing in this area, and especially what our partners, whether it's the Workforce Development Centers, you know, the WRTP Big Step, and what we're doing in partnership with our nonprofit organizations. And Gateway is always proud to share those stories, so it's great to have the governor here. And then he followed that up with a visit over to the Kenosha campus at Every Child's Place, where he signed the proclamation to do as much work as we can here in Wisconsin on helping to keep water quality clean and take lead out of our pipes. And there's been a lot of news media on all of that. But we did have a chance to showcase to the governor our work also in early childhood education. So both of those occasions were really, really appropriate for us, and I think important as we kind of set our direction going forward.
Excellent. Very good. I understand that in terms of visitors, you had quite a load of 300 or 400 people visiting campus recently. What was that about?
Yeah, that's an amazing experience. It's our 10th year of hosting the National Coalition of Certification Centers. We call it NC3 for short. So 10 years ago, Gateway and Snap-on created a partnership to develop a certification pathway in the diagnostics technicians for automotive, and that's now grown throughout the country, and we have many new industry corporate partners that are partnering with us to do this similar activity, including Trane Corporation, Lincoln Electric, 3M, Greenlee, and the list goes on. And each of those companies have developed industry credentials that can align or be embedded with academic credentials, so our students earn their academic skills and their industry certifications all at one time. And so this year, being the 10th anniversary, was a big deal for us. We had 200 college instructors from 43 states across the nation on the Gateway campus for a week, going through their industry training and earning their credentials. And then we had another 200 college administrators, so presidents, vice presidents, deans of programs, industry partners that were touring the campuses, meeting the teachers, learning how this process works within the entire community. And it was really enlightening, engaging, and a lot of high energy. 400 people at one time kind of focused on the same thing. And great visibility for Gateway, and hopefully, again, making a big impact in our nation's workforce.
Wow, very good. That's a lot of cookies
to
bake.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot. There was a lot of meals, that's for sure.
Finally, I know you want to crow a little bit about a very nice grant that Gateway has received.
You know, we're so privileged here at Gateway. We've got some just great investments by our local taxpayers and our state organizations help support the college and philanthropic organizations. And recently we received an announcement that we received a very nice grant in the area of manufacturing from the National Science Foundation, which will tie right into our program today. We've made some big investments in the last 2 years in advanced manufacturing with the expansion of the IMED Center, integration with Industry 4.0. We've had kind of those topics on the show before, and I'm sure we'll have them again going forward. But to be recognized by the National Science Foundation in an area that will provide some research and hopefully some really great best practices for other colleges around the country kind of is a feather in our cap, and it shines a light on the fact that what we've been doing is building a great foundation for advanced manufacturing, and now we get to celebrate that at a national level.
Fantastic. Very good. Well, that does indeed tie into a really fascinating topic that is before us today, and a really fascinating guest as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm really proud to introduce Ann Claire Anderson. She's the Vice President for the Center for Occupational Research and Development out of Waco, Texas. The organization is called CORD for short, and I've personally been involved with CORD for, gosh, I bet it's been 25 years already. My work going all the way back to the Department of Public Instruction in Madison. And CORD's been a leader nationally and internationally in helping to do a lot of things that I just talked about, the alignment of academic curriculum with workforce needs. And so Ann Claire's leading a national research project called Preparing Technicians for the Future of Work. So it fits right in with what we try to do here at Gateway. And she will share with us her perspective on the future of work and then how this whole project has evolved over the last several months.
Very good. Ann Claire Anderson, we welcome you to the morning show. Are you still with us?
I'm still with you. Good morning.
Very good. Glad to hear from you all the way in Waco, Texas. Maybe we could start by hearing a little bit about you, about where you come from originally, and in particular, your sort of professional pathway, your professional journey that has ultimately taken you to the Center for Occupational Research and Development.
Well, my academic background is in education and science, which has led to a lifetime of working for nonprofits with science and education missions. I've been with the Smithsonian Institution and the American Chemical Society in D.C., and then for the better part of 20 years here at CORD.
And tell our listeners a little more about what CORD is all about, what its function is, when it was created, and for what essential purpose?
CORD is an educational nonprofit. We were founded 40 years ago, as of last month. We work nationally in all 50 states and internationally, and our goal is to increase the academic success of students enrolled in career and technical education, and that's from secondary through community college, and then also with adult basic education. We provide professional development, curricula, project management for a whole lot of different organizations, from schools, school districts, community colleges, to government agencies and foundations.
I can just say, Ann Claire, that so my affiliation with CORD, as I mentioned, began a long time ago, and I was fortunate to serve as a state director for Wisconsin in career and technical education, and I remember the curriculum that CORD led the discussions on around applied math, principles of technology, and applied communications, really trying to help take those, what we might call general education expectations of young people and apply them in real-world settings. And I thought that was pretty engaging, and we used it quite extensively throughout the state of Wisconsin to help not only showcase the kind of the combination or the integration between academic and applied learning, but also to help students put some real contextual learning models together. And it's evolved and has really helped shape, you know, some of the new movements across the country, whether it's school to work, youth apprenticeship, work-based learning, all of those integrated and applied strategies. And just want to thank you and the entire team at CORD for helping build that foundation for where we are today.
Of course, you're certainly welcome.
And just to reiterate an important point, CORD is active throughout the United States in all of the 50 states. Is that correct?
We are. Our projects flux from state to state. We have worked in all 50 states. We might not have boots on the ground in all 50 states, but the state directors of career and technical education are partnered with us through the National Career Pathways Network, which is NCPN. Its precursor was the National Tech Prep Network. NCPN itself still exists and hosts a conference and has member services, and that is headquartered out of CORD.
I can just share just sort of a perspective on how this affects Gateway. So NCPN, the National Career Pathway Network, we have many of our staff members that attend that. In fact, Jamie Spatial is a certified mentor for the NCPN network, but Pat Hoppe has written curriculum, has been a part of research projects for CORD under that collaborative effort as well. And it, we've had local school districts. The Lakeview Academy at one time was the National Tech Prep School of the Year. So there's been a lot of different ways that Gateway and our communities have supported this whole development of what CORD represents in the integrated and applied learning models.
And Claire Anderson, you and President Albrecht have been working on a project called Preparing Technicians for the Future of Work. That's a really juicy title, and particularly those last several words, the future of work. It sounds like a big project, and that it probably involves a lot of different layers and a lot of different facets of what a place like Gateway is all about. Tell us more about this project, Preparing Technicians for the Future of Work.
You're right. It is a big topic. In fact, it grew out of the National Science Foundation's 10 big ideas, one of which is the future of work at the human technology frontier. They are investing in projects that address that intersection of human, worker, machines, AI, and the rapidly changing nature of work, which is coming out of all this evolving technology. Preparing Technicians for the Future of Work is funded through the National Science Foundation's Advanced Technological Education Division, which is dedicated to improving two-year STEM technician programs, and that's our goal, to enhance associate degree programs to better prepare technicians for jobs that won't be defined for several years.
You know, what's interesting about that, so under the National Science Foundation, the division of ATE, the Advanced Technical Education funding model, that's also where Gateway's NSF Manufacturing Grant is located. So the focus of the ATE grants are really to engage applied research projects around community college initiatives. So for us, you can tell already this idea of AI, artificial intelligence, advanced manufacturing, how that fits so well for Gateway. So when I was invited to serve on this panel, it was like, absolutely, I want to learn as much as we can about what's going on across the nation. And if we can help provide any guidance or input on that, we're really honored to do that at Gateway. And we've been fortunate in that several of our industry partners have attended the meetings and are actually serving as sort of advisors to the project and providing some guidance and input on their perspectives. I can remember Todd McLeese spoke twice, I think, to the group already, and he's a great partner with us in the build-out of our advanced manufacturing program, and now he's helping at the national level.
So what kind of people serve on the National Industry Committee?
We have 10 advisory board members, including Dr. Albrecht, and these are CEOs, VPs, and information security officers, some here and some with international companies. And they have expertise in manufacturing, biotech, industrial automation, financial information, regulation and safety, medical devices, cybersecurity, entrepreneurship, electronics, cloud computing, sensor technology, and worker training. So it's with 10 people, that's a really nice set of collective knowledge.
And I bet the meetings are really exciting and interesting just to have that much brain power
really
sitting
are.
Around one table.
There's no downtime. There's no, as in radio business, there's no dead air with this group, right? I mean, they have so many ideas and perspectives, and they're all unique, and they come from different angles when you talk about what are some of the current trends or needs in workforce training. And so whether it's cybersecurity or IT management or advanced manufacturing, all the way down to some of the basic skills like I mentioned earlier, how do we make sure that students are prepared for a transition of their job and their career? And so I've been really proud to serve on it, and I've picked up a lot of new insight from our colleagues.
For those of you who are might be just joining us, today is the monthly visit of Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College. We're always happy and honored to have him with us. And joining us via the telephone is Ann Claire Anderson, who is vice president for the Center for Occupational Research and Development, or CORD, which is headquartered in Waco, Texas. And we're talking today about essentially the future of work, the whole way in which the kind of the nature of work, the notion of work is changing. And in particular, the way in which modern technology is really changing the nature of work and what is necessary in order to be a viable member of society in terms of having a good job. That means something very, very different than it did 30, 40, or 50 years ago. And Claire Anderson, maybe we could kind of talk about that notion of the future of work and how it is changing. We've already touched on, in a very basic sort of way, some of the facets of this change. Maybe you could give us some more specifics. What are we seeing that is, in a sense, most dramatic, and also maybe ways that are maybe subtle and wouldn't be so obvious to the casual observer about how work in the future will be different?
Well, change is still a constant, and so lifelong learning is still valued and, in fact, required in order for technicians to keep up with how their jobs are changing. The new technologies that come to the floor are often advanced and more complex than previous technologies, and that makes them easier to run, easier to pull data from. It's that human-machine interaction we were talking about. But it also makes them more difficult to repair. So there are two things I draw from this. One, maintenance of the new machines requires a broader knowledge base. And so it is often outsourced to vendors because technicians don't yet have the training they need to fix them. And two, as machines become more complex, some of the knowledge and skills that used to be needed by people at the engineering level is trickling down to the technician level.
You know, I kind of think of it also in a couple of different broad categories. One, our project here together helps to reshape or refine the technician education that's available and currently being used across the country. So I think about Gateway, 108 years old, founded in 1911. The way we delivered services were so much different. The types of curriculum we taught based on the economy of that time was so different. Today, you know, 2019, we are seeing a rapid growth change, and we've talked about it, Greg, on the show. This building is human patient simulation now, right? These are human robots, and in manufacturing, it's artificial intelligence and data analytics, and it's robots and machines talking to machines, and how do people interact with that? So just the nature of our business in technical education is changing because of the way that work is done. And so to have a project like this help to really encapsulate that or in some way quantify what types of skill sets are required to be successful today but also in the future is really important. So that redefinition of technical education. And then the second part to that is what Aunt Claire just really emphasized here, and that's the community collaboration. So no college by themselves could do this. No industry by themselves could do this, right? It takes a combined effort because if we're talking about the future of work, those are young people that are already in our schools. We know what the workforce is going to look like in 15 years, right? They're in third grade. And so how do we help inspire and instill teachers and put curriculum in place that's going to be a collaborative effort between the needs of industry and the needs of education and really kind of build this community-based learning model? And I'm just really proud of the work that's already been done. And the conversation topics are what's so fascinating, cloud-based computing and cybersecurity and how do we protect assets. And, you know, probably wouldn't have been talking about that 5 years ago in any educational setting, especially in our pathway here at Gateway.
Mm. And Claire Anderson, tell us more about this research project with the National Science Foundation. First of all, is this kind of a commonplace collaboration for CORD? Has this happened before? Is it likely to occur again? And what's kind of the nature of the research that is being done? Is there anything, in a sense, sort of special and new about what is being done?
There are some new things. We're pretty cutting edge in several ways. We're looking at cross-cutting skills in an interdisciplinary way with an eye toward maybe 10 years in the future. In the past, NSF-ATE, the program has funded very few interdisciplinary projects. They're usually focused on improving STEM associate degree programs in a single technology area of interest, such as advanced manufacturing or biotech or energy or nanotech or IT or something else. Our ATE project is bringing together instructional leaders from multiple disciplines with industry leaders from multiple sectors to address cross-cutting knowledge and skills. And those are skills that all STEM technicians regardless of their sector or discipline, will need to thrive in the future of work.
You know, Ann Claire, first of all, just you deserve a lot of credit for pulling this team together and making this project a reality. And I also just want to give a shout-out to Celeste Carter, who is our project officer at the National Science Foundation, for her engagement and her continued support in the investment by the National Science Foundation in this new direction. And then, of course, the CEO, Hope Kottner, for CORD, because Hope is really kind of the one that helped spearhead the idea of trying to put together a project that would be cross disciplines, and that would include a national focus on looking at the integration of current work skills and future work skills. They've done a remarkable job with that.
What are some of the more specific projects, Ann Claire Anderson, that you are currently working on?
Well, this year we'll continue our industry site visits and interviews. Those interviews are with employees at all levels in the technical workforce, and so they help us understand what new technologies they've seen, what's coming, and what they are going to need either in upskilling or for an incoming workforce. This year, we'll also start holding regional convenings, and that's where we'll bring industry and educators to the table to discuss future of work issues and their implications with a more regional focus.
You know, that's going to tie in so well because, as I just mentioned in the opening comments, that the governor was recently here talking about those issues, and we didn't have any trouble filling the room. There's a lot of employers that want to talk about the regional needs, and I think the industry visits are also pretty compelling because there's nothing like getting out on the shop floor and taking a look at what people are doing to really fully understand the work. And, you know, one of the things that I found really valuable, and I think all of our listeners could tap into it, would be the whole blog series that's been put together, interviews with experts in certain areas. Maybe you could highlight a couple of the key blog series that have been put together.
One of our blog posts is on leadership in Industry 4.0 and what that will look like. What are those needed skills in order to be a leader at a company? Another one is on featuring the high-tech conference and some of the main points that came out of our special interest group, which was another kind of discussion between industry and educators as we prioritize some of these skills that cross boundaries. And so you can read a little bit about that there. We also have podcasts on the website, and they cover a wide variety of interesting topics related to the future of work, related to advancing technology. Our most recent podcast, and Mike Lasecki does those for the project, our most recent podcast is on digital twins. Digital twins is something that we discussed at our special interest group, and very few of us understood what they are and their significance. So you can tune into podcasts and get a taste of some of these advanced technologies.
Yeah, I think that's actually what I was thinking of, the podcast, but so I said blog series, so thank you for covering both. And I think people can find access to that on Science 360 Radio or iTunes or Google Play or wherever they receive
their... They can go directly to our website.
To the website,
as well.
Yep.
You know, as you were just touching on whatever this is, digital twins, which I've never even heard of, it just occurred to me that one of the things that is so challenging for you at CORD is the same kind of challenge faced here at Gateway Technical College, is that you have these technological breakthroughs that are happening all over the landscape, and it's hard enough when you are part of a specific sector of the economy where a particular breakthrough is occurring, staying on top of it. But I can scarcely imagine what it's like to be in an entity like CORD or at a place like Gateway where you're in a sense responsible for understanding all of it and responding to all of it comprehensively. That's a staggering challenge, I should think.
Yeah, it's pretty in-depth. Well, I mean, if you think about it, just the idea of a digital twin would mean that you can simulate a manufacturing process or development of a complete product in a computer world, in a simulated world, before you actually build anything. So in that case alone, you need to be pretty comprehensive in your IT and your design and your graphics and all before you even get to the end of let's actually try to make one of these products, right? So you're right. There's this full integration of all of the different software knowledge and application knowledge and how do you actually machine a part knowledge. And it's an interesting dynamic when they all come together.
Right. And so Ann Claire Anderson, for you at Cord then, that is something you are consistently having to deal with, I should think.
Yeah, one of our approaches is to look at skills that, regardless of the technical area, a technician will need. And so, for example, advanced digital literacy or business fundamentals, those kind of things that every technician will need on top or integrated into their regular associate degree program in a specific technology.
What's always challenging, too, is trying to keep the degree pattern in a similar context, so 60 credits, not trying to extend that to more than 60, 65 credits. So you've got new information coming in. Does it replace something else, or is it integrated in a new way? So for a student, it's just a faster pace of learning and a more integrated skill set that's required to be able to perform tasks in an environment where you have an integrated manufacturing process, Industry 4.0 as an example.
So Ann Claire Anderson, what is kind of your ultimate hope that will be the result of all of this work that you and President Albrecht have been outlining?
First, I hope we will identify cross-disciplinary knowledge that the future requires. But ultimately, our project will make recommendations for changes to associate degree programs that graduate technicians. These recommendations will be based on extensive data gathering and stakeholder discussions and our interviews with industry staff. So those are kind of the things that at the end of the 4 years we hope to have.
And where are you in the timeline? Where are you in that 4 years right now?
We have finished year one. We are beginning year two. So we have some time. Our year one was spent gathering a lot of data and talking to a lot of people. And that process will continue.
And the first year went really fast, I could tell you that. But, and I agree. I think not only do we want to learn a lot, but we want to find a real strong application so that colleges like Gateway and others across the nation can leverage this research and this industry engagement, the input that's been provided to help us, again, not only improve our programs, but ultimately improve our outcomes, which would be the skill sets that our students have as they go apply for jobs.
Are you seeing, Ann Claire Anderson, are you seeing common trends, common needs, common issues coming up in these various industries with which you are working, or is each industry, in a sense, contending with issues and challenges that are, in a sense, kind of unique to what they do?
Well, not surprisingly, there are some common threads that we hear about all the time. There are still specific technical skills that new hires need, but more often than not, those human skills are mentioned. For example, good communication skills up and down the chain, and an eagerness to learn.
I was really excited, too, when we had our last advisory committee meeting. One of the comments that came out was, don't wait for the project to end to start implementing, right? So get started right away. We're learning things all the time, because even in a four-year window, likely that's something that we thought of was really important in year one may have evolved into something totally different in year four. So we've got to just continue to improve the process we use, so it's a continuous improvement model. But also, like Ann Claire said, those human skills, and it's really how do we adapt people to the changes that are happening with technology. And if we can help provide pathways for student engagement, whether it's through digital literacy or other applications of technology, it's going to not only serve them well in their career, but also in their life.
But, you know, you're pointing to something that's really intriguing, Ann Claire Anderson, which is that the successful worker in this new world is going to have a real appetite, maybe an insatiable appetite for learning new things, because nothing is going to stay the same. So it's not like being a car mechanic in Mayberry 60 years ago
where a car in 1940 was pretty much the same car as it was in 1950 or whatever. But, I mean, now the world around us is changing, and we have to have workers who love the idea of changing with it and learning the new things that keep coming up persistently. I mean, that's a really fundamental thing that has to happen. And in some ways, it needs to happen before somebody steps into a place like Gateway Technical College or steps into a workplace.
You mentioned two things. One, that the workforce is global, and that is more a factor than it used to be, and the rapid pace at which technology is changing. Both of those are factors that we didn't really have to deal with in the past, and now those are part of life.
You know, I was, in the beginning of the program, I mentioned the NC3 network and how that started with a certification in partnership with Snap-on and Diagnostics. And Snap-on will tell you that there are a billion data points available through Snap-on's data network for the automotive industry. So as an example, Greg, if you owned a 2016 Honda and something wasn't working correctly on it, a technician could interface a computer to it and it could track the number of times that problem happened in that particular year or that model of car and give you an analysis of what is likely to be wrong with it so that you can diagnose that problem and solve that problem much quicker based on the data that's been collected from those cars throughout the entire world. So the idea of this integration of data and the expectations of a technician to be able to do critical thinking, analysis, and that's really the future of work. So it's about assessing all of the data that's available and making the best informed decision in order to perform that task.
And Claire Anderson, so help us understand what this work has to do with a place like Gateway Technical College. What is the potential impact that this could have on a place like Gateway and the choices that President Albrecht and his team, for instance, need to make as they, in a sense, shape and craft what Gateway is going to offer and how it's going to offer it?
Our intent is to help colleges like Gateway strengthen and enhance their programs. So we would provide professional development to programs and instructors and college presidents who would like to learn how to integrate new foundational knowledge and skills that all STEM technicians need into their teaching practice. It's not a replacement of a course. I would say it is more of an integration across courses.
And I would just say there's a real strong appetite for that because I think, you know, colleges like ours are measured differently than maybe some universities. So we're measured based on the job placement rates of our students. So if our students aren't getting jobs, then we're not fulfilling our mission here at Gateway. And I think learning more about that whole strategy of the future of work, those human skills, the integration, helping our students become better prepared is so dependent upon the professional development we provide for our teachers, our instructors, so that they have great industry skills, but how do you tie some of the new technology skills into it? And then that service that CORD could provide as a result of this work could help not only improve that, but strengthen it.
What about help to employers as they are looking for new workers? How does your work impact them?
So new hires that come out of, for example, an enhanced Gateway technology program will have a set of skills that is pre-vetted and prioritized by industry and educators. And those skills are on top of their technical skills, and so they go beyond that scope. They are applicable all across the industry or across the floor at a manufacturing plant. These are skills that enable new workers to interact more effectively at that human technology interface.
And I would just add one thing that I've noticed over the last couple of years at Gateway, that this idea of the mobile workforce. So if students have skills that are applicable anywhere in this region, anywhere across this country, or even across the globe, this will not only help them advance their career, but will give them mobility and access to jobs throughout the entire economy.
Yes, the skills are portable.
As you look back over this first year of this four-year project, what big ideas have maybe emerged as being of paramount importance, and what impact might that have on the project as you head into year two?
In year one, we honed in on three sets of cross-cutting knowledge and skills: data analysis and knowledge, advanced digital literacy, and business knowledge and processes. And we came to these after holding conversations of industry reps and community college instructors, plus interviewing plant technicians and their supervisors and reviewing industry skills standards and collecting the objectives from relative coursework. So we synthesized that into these three big topics. And this year we'll continue to visit industrial sites, and we'll have regional convenings that continue to explore those three big buckets of information and help map out the future of work, looking at the priorities for skills within those big ideas. And our ultimate goal, again, is to enhance associate degree programs so that they can better prepare technicians for jobs that don't even exist yet.
And I would just add, Greg, I think just adding value to what an associate degree can mean for a person, it is like that bridge degree, right? Some, we all know that jobs today and in the future need some education beyond high school. So what is it? Is it a four-year degree, a six-year degree, an eight-year degree? What might it be? Mm. And in many cases, it's not a four-year degree, but it's some training after high school. So it might be a one-year diploma or a two-year associate degree. So we're honing in on the two-year associate degree, knowing that that can be a bridge then off to a four-year or greater graduate degree if they choose to do that. And so this work's already been presented to the American Association of College Boards, the Committee on Program Initiatives and Workforce Training, the National Academy of Sciences, on Engineering and Medicine Roundtable on Data Science and Education. So we're looking at how do we influence the two-year model to kind of be that bridge into the workforce, making sure that students are successful or transitioning into a four-year university degree with the contextual learning that's going to make a lot more applied opportunities for students.
Mm. And the flexibility.
I think that's something that's really unique about this project is that we're focusing on two-year degrees, and in fact, in two-year degrees that aren't just transfer. They have transferability, but they also offer a job after the one-year certificate or the two-year degree. There are not organizations out there that are focused on the future of work with an eye toward technicians. When they think about two-year degrees, they're thinking about it only in the terms of its worth as a transfer degree, not as a job a job offer at a well-paying job.
And that's what makes it so important for Gateway and other colleges like us, because our core focus is the occupational training and the connection to the job market. So this work is really foundational for us looking at not only the future of work, but the future of education.
Ann Claire Anderson, I suspect that as you are working with industries and colleges all across the country, that there are probably certain places where they are, in a sense, scrambling to catch up to all of this. And then there are other places, and in my biased opinion, Gateway is one of them. There are schools that, in a sense, are riding the crest of the wave and not scrambling to catch up. I mean, I should think that really makes a big difference if a school is proactive when it comes to trying to understand and meet these challenging changes in the workforce environment. That makes a big difference, I should think, in how successful they can be in training their students for this new world.
Certainly. And we have the luxury of working with what are called ATE National Centers, and they generally work in one of those big fields or a few of those big technological fields, like advanced manufacturing or biotech. And so generally, they are the ones who are cutting edge in that particular field. And so when we are able to pull them together, that strengthens our project and strengthens the whole of community colleges throughout the country.
You make a really good point, and I think it's important to the success of this project. These national centers of excellence, whether it's manufacturing or biotech. In fact, Madison College, so at Madison Area Technical College, is one of the partners in the biotech arena. So we're able to leverage their experience, learn how the biotech industry, or might be the center for manufacturing in Florida, how does that work intersect? So this project actually combines all of those different ideas that are being created through these different centers, and hopefully we'll come out with a unique platform that will help all of the centers plus all the individual colleges.
Hmm. Is there a website that people can go to learn more about this project and or anything else that CORD is active in doing?
Certainly. They can go to preparingtechnicians, all one word, .org to find out more about our project and to read blogs and download podcasts. Or there's also a contact place if they'd like to receive more information and be kept up to date, then I will be happy to correspond with them. And for CORD, www.cord.org, and you'll see a wide range of our projects nationally and internationally.
Very good. Ann Claire Anderson is Vice President for CORD, the Center for Occupational Research and Development, headquartered in Waco, Texas. Ann Claire Anderson, we appreciate you taking the time to join us today on The Morning Show. Thank you for your good work and best wishes with the future.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
And, of course, President Brian Albrecht, great to have you on The Morning Show today as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm Gregory Berg. And to finish out today's Morning Show, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about the significance of portion size when it comes to unwanted weight gain. My guest, Lisa Young, is the author of a book called The Portion Teller, Smart Size Your Way to Permanent Weight Loss. She talks in her book, among other things, about how the escalation of portion size in modern America is a very, very significant problem.
You know, it is amazing how portion sizes have grown so much in the past 30 years and how people have gained weight in parallel. The average adult has gained 8 pounds beginning in the 1980s, and that is just at the same time that portions began to explode. So I realize that in treating people and in counseling people, it's not so much what they eat that they need to worry about, but it's how much they eat. And in The Portion Teller, I've devised a plan, a user-friendly visual guide to help people, A, estimate portions, and B, determine their portion personality and their eating style so that they can lose weight permanently and keep it off.
Hmm. We should mention the photograph of you, which is on the back flap of your book's cover, because right there we see a perfect example of what you're talking about in terms of the explosion in the size of portions.
Oh, absolutely. You see a soda cup that is 64 ounces, a half gallon of soda, marketed for just one person, that contains nearly 800 calories and 50 teaspoons of sugar.
Mm.
That's unbelievable.
Well, and then next to it, next to that double gulp from 7-Eleven, are soda cups which are in descending size towards something that's a little more normal, including a normal styrofoam cup at the far left. And we just kind of see right there a very graphic indication of how portion size has really exploded over recent years.
Oh, absolutely. And that styrofoam cup used to be a standard size. Now you can't find that anywhere.
The small styrofoam cups we grew up with, you mean?
Right, right. Now you don't get that. If you were to buy that in a restaurant or any place, you would feel gypped. You'd feel like, oh, I need to call the portion police.
Yeah, right. it's interesting. The convenience store right down the road from the studio here, the radio studio, during the summer, they have a special of any size soda, 69 cents. Mm. And I'm sure many people opt for I think their largest happens to be 44 ounces, which is a lot of soda.
That's a lot of soda.
And because they have this one price for any of them, of course, many people will gravitate towards the largest for the sake of the bargain, even though they are doing themselves some harm.
That's what it is. We really, in America, want a deal. We want a bargain, but what we don't realize is at the end of the day, we're not getting a health bargain. We're gaining weight, and there's lots of consequences that go along with that, not just that the pants are too tight. You've got diabetes, and you've got heart disease.
Hmm. Tell our listeners about the Portion Museum, which you assembled as you began studying this in a serious way.
Oh, okay. The Portion Museum is, as I was getting my PhD in nutrition at NYU, and I was specifically focusing on how portion sizes have grown enormously. And before I started my research, it just hit me to kind of go around the streets and look to see all of the things that have gotten bigger. So I was taking pictures. I was collecting things. For example, you go to Starbucks. You want the small coffee. What do you get tall? The smallest is tall. I found bagels the size of seat cushions. I found muffins that were so enormous. Everything around us has gotten big. You know, a Big Mac, which used to be big back in 1968, is only 3 ounces. You can get a half a pound burger. Hmm. You could actually get two-thirds of a pound if you go to Hardee's. So Everything I've tracked has gotten bigger, and it wasn't just one food. I mean, it was even beer cans, a 24-ounce beer can, beer bottles, and I was collecting these things, movie theater containers. It was like a horse feed, not a portion for one person. And that's what really led me to say, wait a minute, we need to educate the public not on what they eat, but on how much they eat. And the key to permanent weight loss is learning to scale back on how much we eat. And in the Portion Teller, I developed a visual program to help people with that information. I don't ask them to weigh their foods or measure their foods because that's not going to work. But think a deck of cards, 3 ounces. Think a shot glass of salad dressing. You know, that's 2 tablespoons. It's much more user-friendly, and it will work in the long term.
Hmm. You know, that brings up to something that you call a portion distortion. Oh. That's at that point in the book when you're kind of showing us, and there's big, long, fascinating lists of what you call portion shockers of exactly what you were talking about. And one of the consequences you tell us is that we lose all sense of what small, medium, and large even means. I mean, those adjectives are meaningless when it comes to something as important as portion control. And in a sense, then, your book imposes a different way to think beyond those now meaningless terms, like what's a small, what's a medium, what's a large.
Yeah, those terms are totally meaningless. And you go into a place and you say, ooh, I'll have the small or the kitty, and you think you're being virtuous. But the kitty size today is what the large used to be back in the 50s.
Hmm.
You know, it's unbelievable how much portions have grown and how our perception has then changed once we're in the home as well.
Hmm.
And that's the scary part. We're buying bigger plates, 25%. Plates have grown in size by 25%. We're buying bigger mugs, bigger glasses, and, of course, we pile more food on. And research clearly shows that we eat more when we're presented with a bigger portion.
Right. You mentioned at one point in the book two terms which we are probably a bit too sloppy with, a serving versus a portion.
Exactly.
What is the most important distinction for us to know there?
The most important distinction is everybody thinks that an appropriate amount of food is a portion, what you're served in the restaurant. But what you're served in the restaurant has nothing to do with how much you should eat, and how much you should eat is a serving.
Dr. Lisa Young's book is called The Portion Teller, Smart Size Your Way to Permanent Weight Loss. And she has written a second book since this interview was recorded, a book called The Portion Teller Plan, The No Diet Reality Guide to Eating, Cheating, and Losing Weight Permanently, published by Crown. And tomorrow on The Morning Show, we're going to continue talking about eating well, this time with a Milwaukee-based writer by the name of Raina Andrews, who has written a charming children's book called Alex McGreen and the Tale of the Mysterious Kale. We'll have a conversation with her tomorrow, and we will find out about some of the work that she does as what she likes to call a public health ambassador. And on Thursday, out of the archives, I hope you'll be able to hear my conversation recorded some years ago with NPR's Scott Simon. We'll be talking about his memoir, which tells the story of he and his wife adopting 2 beautiful girls from China. The book is titled Baby, We Were Meant for Each Other. And on Friday, we'll be talking to 3 representatives of an organization called Just Live, who work tirelessly on the important issue of suicide prevention. Their Labor of Love Music Festival is coming up on September 1st. Support for the Morning Show comes from Carthage College, home of the Aspire program and its multifaceted approach to career preparation. The new program is designed to cultivate leadership and entrepreneurial skills while empowering each Carthage student to shape a custom career development plan for the first days on campus. Learn more about the Aspire program at carthage.edu/aspire. We remind you that the Morning Show is now available as a podcast, and you can hear a different Morning Show 7 days a week with the podcast. You need to search for the title, The Morning Show with Greg Berg, and it is available on all the major podcast platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast.